Hey guys, this is Coach Keita Bussey with 180 Firearms Training, Sam Callahan with Callahan Training Group, and today our guest is Steve Moses. Welcome to the 180 Firearms Training Podcast. Hey Steve, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody all about you?
Well, my name is Steve Moses. I live in Texas, about 75 miles west of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I live about 5 miles into the Hill Country. I've been a firearms trainer since 1994. I'm currently the director of training and a co-owner of a Palisade Training Group. I was a reserve deputy for 18 years. I was on the special response team for 10 of those years. I'm currently a contract, not an employee, but a contractor, if you will, for both the Farm Trainers Association and CCW Safe. For CCW Safe, I write content dedicated towards concealed carriers and firearm enthusiasts. Do the same thing for the Farm Trainers Association, but I'm also probably the primary customer support person for the Firearm Trainers Association. So if someone needs a range endorsement or has a question or needs our assistance, a lot of times I'm the person that they will first contact. I'm a range master, master firearms instructor, also a range master defensive instructor. I've got multiple instructor certifications, OC, less lethal, force on force, active shooter, small impact weapons, empty hand knife defense, and red dot pistol. I'm licensed in the state of Texas to, as a level 4 personal protection officer in Texas. In order to do executive protection, you have to be licensed. I'm an instructor. I've been active in the executive protection field for some 20 years. I was the shift lead on a mega church security team for 8 years. It was an 8-man team. Brown belt, Helson Gracie Jiu Jitsu.
That's You've done a few it. Things.
I've done a few things. I've been around.
So, as a firearms instructor myself, I use FTA Protect as my personal plan as an instructor. And I really like it because I travel around to a lot of different ranges and at no additional cost. You know, you pay your annual fee and that's it. And I can just drop them a line and I've got whatever range I need on there. And I've even had situations where a range gets flooded out. We have a full class and have to find a place to put them. And at the last minute, they've been able to come through and hook me up and get me that certification for that range just at the drop of a hat. So they've been really amazing for me. I've been very, very happy.
Well, one of the things that I have kind of going for me is that as a firearms trainer, for nearly 3 decades, I completely understand all the problems that firearm trainers, you know, must run into. And one of the last things they want to have to mess with is getting a range endorsement right before a class is about to make. And I typically try to work 5 days a week. I'm a part-time contractor. But if someone contacts me and says, I need one right now, and I see it, and it's Sunday morning at 9 a.m., you'll have one at Sunday morning at 9:20 a.m.
Yes. And it's been absolutely been my experience. It's just there, it's done, and it meets all of the requirements. So a lot of ranges will have a $2 million plan requirement. Mm-hmm. And I've had no issue with these guys. Mm-hmm. So it's been awesome for me.
Awesome. Well, what a lot of people do not know is that the Farm Trainers Association is owned by the same principals that own CCW Safe. And their specialty over there is litigation on behalf of their clients. So in the event of a claim against one of our members, it's going to be the very same guys that have extensive experience in dealing with this that will handle their claim, as opposed to, oh yeah, one of the things we also do is liability coverage on the side. We have one or two of those claims a year. So our staff is very, very experienced. And I think maybe that may be the one thing that perhaps sets us apart from some of our competitors. I'll never talk trash on a competitor, I'm often asked, could you do a compare and contrast with, you know, another party? And I'm like going, no, I'm not willing to do that for the simple reason I don't want to accidentally say something or represent something that's untrue. Right. So I encourage them to check those people out, check us out, but I'm a huge advocate of the staff we have working for there. And I just, you know, I'm glad they're covering me.
Well, I'll tell you, I've used other plans and I've never been happy until now. Now I'm happy.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it just sounds like a group of people as like led by yourself, or at least spearheaded by yourself. I mean, you guys have so much more experience than any other company in this field that it sounds like, all right, that's pretty much where I would be leaning. If Kita says, okay, I travel the country and world to do this and you guys are the tops, then all right, like this sounds like something people should start to listen to.
Well, Sam, and one of the other things is that all three of the principals are former law enforcement, and two of them have been sued in federal court as a result of being involved in shootings or uses of force. The person that's probably going to be the first on the scene is Gary Eastridge. And Gary Eastridge has been in a shooting, and he is a former homicide investigator for the Oklahoma City Police Department, Oklahoma County. He has a tremendous amount of experience. And when something happens, if we need to send somebody to the scene, which we do on behalf of any CCW safe involved use of force, Gary's the person to go there. And what he finds is very critical in actually obtaining a verdict of innocent in some of these cases.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of expertise is that's invaluable. That's amazing to have. That's not some ex-lawyer who just studied force on force. That's a field expert that now works for that. That's amazing, yeah.
And also a really great guy.
He is an awesome guy. He is a great guy.
So tell us more about, so we have the FTA Protect, that is the instructor plan, but you also have the CCW Safe side of the house. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, they're structured very much the same way. It's not insurance. It's prepaid legal liability coverage that's a benefit of being a member. It's backed by insurance. Our standard policy is it's $1 million per incident, $2 million in the aggregate. We are able to name ranges or classrooms as additional covered parties. There's no charge for that. They pretty much operate very much the same way.
So with CCW Save, let's take Eli, what was his last name? Oh, I can't remember his last name. Eli, the guy that was in the mall shooting.
Dickens,
yes, thank you. Of course, the Dickens drill. So okay. Eli Dickens was in that mall shooting. So let's say he had CCW Save. This shooting takes place. Of course, 911 is called. Then if he had this plan, his next call should be to CCW Safe. And then what happens?
Well, first thing, of course, is he needs to be careful with what he says. He needs to go ahead, let the responding law enforcement, let them see the big pieces of the puzzle so they can sort out, hey, I am the person that was involved in this. I was attacked, or these people were attacked. I defended myself. I will cooperate with you fully to the extent that I can once I've had an opportunity to talk to counsel. And responding law enforcement knows at that time that they should not question you any further. By the same token, it's very important that you keep your mouth shut. We have a tendency when something like that happens to, of course, we're feeling a lot of stress and anxiety, mm-hmm. and we want to justify our actions. It's very easy to go ahead and make some comments that turn out to be completely erroneous through no fault of our own. Or basically what we were seeing, someone else didn't see. And then the perception later becomes, oh, he was lying or she was lying about her part in that. So basically, you know, identify yourself, be prepared. Perhaps your weapon will probably be seized. There is a possibility, dependent upon the city and state and the circumstances, that you will be arrested. But at some point, you need to call CCW Safe once you are given that opportunity. So if you can't remember CCW Safe's number, then basically you want to get a hold of somebody that you know, such as a dear friend, a spouse, a boyfriend, a girlfriend who can contact CCW Safe on your behalf. At that point, that call basically goes right into the hotline. More often than not, the person answering the phone may very well be Don West, who was George Zimmerman's attorney in the Trayvon Martin shooting. And so Don West is always going to be the person there for it. He's the national counsel for CCW Safe. They'll contact Gary, and there's a good chance, depending upon the time of day, that Gary may be on an airplane headed your way in 4 to 8 hours. You can pretty much expect that to happen. They will pay your bail. They will. Now I want to make sure. I think it's up to. I'm sure there's a limit on that bail and everything. Golly, you kind of got me there. So I may have to come back later and provide you with that information because I haven't given any thought to that. Get you out of jail, because otherwise you're not in a position where you can help the attorneys, basically develop the case in the manner in which they want to, in order that they can present it. Typically, you're going to be, you may spend one night in jail. You may not spend any time in jail. At that time, Don West, as national counsel, we've identified defense attorneys in that state, within that area in which the shooting occurred, that practice defense law. We vet those people, and then Don will work with those attorneys in order to handle your case. In terms of your case itself, the facts of the case will be presented to all of the principals of CCW Safe, at which time they basically kind of come up with a battle plan, how they want to do this, get this thing in motion. Our number one objective is going to be that you don't get charged, or if you're charged, you're quickly released. But if not, and we have had a felony one indictment, if you are charged, well, then basically they're going to handle your case from, as they say, soup to nuts. In the event that you are found guilty or you take a plea of any kind, it's not going to be necessary for you to remit any of the costs that you incurred as a result, or that CCW Safe has incurred as a result of their actions. So from what I understand, and I cannot verify it, and I think there may be some plans out there in which you plead to self-defense. I believe there's a possibility that you may be liable for the expenses that you've incurred up to that point. That is not the case for CCW Safe. And I would encourage anybody that is interested in more information to just go ahead and go to the CCW Safe website, and they've got all that information put out there, including some frequently asked questions. In addition, anytime that someone has a question, please feel free to call in and talk to the customer service representatives. High possibility, one of them might be Gary Eastridge. Another one is Rob High, former Oklahoma City Police Department detective, retired. So those are the two people that field the majority of your calls. And they are really subject matter experts as to what CCW Safe does on a daily basis. I simply write content for them that is based upon both my experience as a concealed carrier and a firearms trainer.
Yeah, and if you can't remember any of that, and you know me, just email 180firearmstraining@gmail.com and I'll get you there.
I mean, awesome. It sounds pretty much like the short term here coming from just my ears is really high end subject matter experts, all inclusive, low risk.
Yeah, it's like the price of Netflix.
Yeah.
If you're going to pay for Netflix every month to entertain yourself, why wouldn't you pay even less than that to protect yourself and your family? Yeah. So speaking of family, so what if you have someone underage, like the Kyle Rittenhouse case? He was 17, I believe, when that all went down. So do you have to be 18? I would assume you have to be 18.
Yes, you can't be a minor. Cannot be a minor.
Okay. So what and if...
In most states, a person's under the age of 21 cannot purchase, and I'm not even sure, it may vary from state to state, but be in possession of a concealed handgun. So I think that's going to be, that varies from state to state. So can't really say for sure what exactly you have to have in place in order to become a member of either, but you need to be, as far as I know, legal to carry a handgun.
So what if let's say there was a home invasion.
Okay, if you have a home invasion and one, well, I guess what we would be talking about probably here is that a member of the household was a member of CCW Safe. Is that the situation? And it's one of their other family members that's involved. My understanding is CCW Safe will take that case. Probably okay. Needs to be confirmed. But again, and I'm sorry, I really didn't prepare. You
that's
know,
okay. We're asking some detailed questions here.
But I believe that there are plans. Again, that's all set out. But as far as I know, as a member for CCW Safe, if it is my wife who is actually involved in the use of force, we would be covered.
Okay. I'm thinking of, you know, I have a 15-year-old daughter, or think about Morgan, who was on here recently. She's now a world champion pistol shooter. She's not going to hesitate to grab a gun if someone breaks into the house, but then they're 15 years old, both of these kids, and they can handle themselves, but they're not able to conceal carry.
Keita, I think everything that I'm telling you is accurate. This is probably something we maybe need to take a look at and confirm before we finalize this podcast.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's definitely interesting because it's a distinct possibility more and more in our industry. I just worked with a couple of guys over the weekend that their kids were part of the training with us, and they're 16, 17-year-olds who can handle themselves like men like the rest of us with knives and firearms and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely more and more of a question I hear from a lot of parents now, because I know a lot of these parents who, instead of shying away and keeping the kids away from guns, they just involve them in training. And it's that's how I got involved in the industry, and I appreciate it, but I'm seeing it happen more. So I think it's definitely something it's nice to hear that you guys are family oriented. You're very happy to take on something like that.
Yeah.
I'm quite confident that everything I told you there was accurate, but like I said, you know, I've lived too long to let something go out there without, you know, vetting it, making sure that indeed what I said was valid before.
So you're able to fill us in generally. If people have really specific questions like this, we can direct them to where to find this information.
There are people that actually will take those calls on behalf of CCW Safe. And many of the questions that you are asking, I believe, are addressed directly on the website.
Perfect.
Now, ask me stuff about FDA, and I know everything. CCW Safe, I'm kind of on the periphery there.
Gotcha. So tell us about the red flag laws and how that works. You offer protection also against red flag laws. And maybe you can explain to people who don't know what a red flag law is, what that means. I'm sure everyone listening does, but.
Well, a red flag law is basically some sort of authority has the right, has been given the right to come in there and seize firearms if for some reason you have been deemed as a person that's a dangerous individual. It's just going to be the same type of thing. Basically, it's going to be the same people that are involved. They'll investigate the circumstances and they will intervene on your behalf. Now, a lot of people go and they'll give me my guns back. Well, they will do everything they can, assuming that you didn't say something crazy or you didn't do something crazy. And so a lot of people go, yeah, if I have this, I have this insurance, so then I can go out and do this. It's like, circumstances do not judge that.
But if your neighbor is mad that you didn't mow your lawn last week and they call the police because they're mad at you and they know you have firearms and they say, oh, I think this person's unfit to have a firearm, then you could be investigated and then they would be protected.
You need to contact CCW Safe immediately and let them handle it.
Yeah, that's
so for someone like, let's say, who's coming back from a deployment and they are having some mental health issues. Sam, I asked Sam if he could speak a little bit to this about gun sitters. They offer something for that.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with gun sitters, Steve, but they're a company. I actually work out of the range in PA and I work with them, but essentially they offer, we'll call it gun babysitting services. So gun sitters, they have a locker and a legal system in place that you can actually have a trust with them and be able to turn over your firearms, and they can hold on to them legally in the case of you deploying for a long period of time. In the case of, say, you know, your neighbor may be red flagging you and you know you might have a spat outside in your front yard and he said, I'm calling the cops. All right. You call gun sitters. Gun sitters fills out your paperwork. They take your stuff. And then the police may come and they might talk to you, but the firearms are safe, so to say.
Oh, that's incredible.
So yeah, I mean, they also have it for casual reasons. If you just don't have enough storage in your home or you live in an apartment, you could have a locker for a monthly fee. But this is also, it's not insurance, like you're saying. It is in kind of, it works as an insurance policy, but it's just a prepaid fee that you have a locker somewhere else. Someone else has control of your firearms and you can't be deemed unfit to own them if somebody else has them.
So yeah, it's a fun workaround. Yeah. That's outstanding. As a matter of fact, I appreciate you sharing that with me because that's something that I can.
Yeah, they're good people. It was the whole idea was based around kind of what Kita said. A soldier was deploying and he needed a place to keep his guns. He didn't want to leave him with his girlfriend. You know, hey, everybody knows that story. You know, you don't need to go into it, but you don't want to come back and be surprised that your guns aren't there, your house isn't there. So they figured out the system and it ended up working out for all these reasons as well. And now they have a van that they'll go pop up. They'll pop right into your house, pick up whatever needs to get picked up for collection reasons or for red flag reasons. And you're issued at least a little bit of security in your mind, you know, a little bit of ease of mind there. So I'm glad I at least brought it up then, because it's something right with your business. It's kind of like the physical side of your legal side.
Yeah, that's something awesome. I've mentioned to Gary as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I didn't put it as eloquently as it could be put, but I'm just a firearm.
And one of the things is, we see guys that go through a breakup with a girlfriend. I mean, it go the other way, or marriages in which divorce and the one party or the other decides that they're going to punish the other party. And one of the best ways to do that is to go ahead and say, well, he or she threatened me with a gun. And then it becomes kind of a he said, she said thing. You definitely need someone like CCW Safe on your side, because, I mean, filing a false police report is a crime. And a lot of people don't realize, you know, what could take place if they've said something like that. And it's very obvious that it's just based on complete flimsy.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. And it's unfortunately, with our litigious society and the way things are going, it's just becoming, that used to be a horror story, but that's becoming something that happens right now. So it's just something that I want all my people who carry for a living, who people who work with guns for a living, or just own enough guns that it's part of your lifestyle, to start considering options like this and start thinking about what happens if. It's not the before, it's the after that nobody thinks about.
So, well, and a lot of people, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, a lot of people think of it, okay, something like that is going to perhaps stem from a personal relationship that I have, whether it's just a neighbor across the street. But the reality of it is, when you go to Facebook or YouTube and you see what some of these people are doing, parading around with guns, and they're obviously, you know, self-acclaimed gun nuts, and you see them doing stuff that would basically cause people that don't know a lot about it great concern. And then they see you may very well be red flagged by someone that you had no idea you were on the radar. So one of the things I've always done is I've encouraged not only our members, but just concealed carriers in general, is maintain a low profile. Be the gray man. You don't want to have NRA stickers on your vehicle. You don't want to have something that says, I only carry $20 worth of ammo, or, you know, I call Smith & Wesson.
We don't call that one alone. Yeah.
Stay under the radar, but be very, very careful, especially with what you're posting on Facebook. Because one of the things that, if you are charged with a crime, guess what the prosecuting side is going to do? They're going to go through everything that you've put out there in media. And if you've been doing that stuff casually, today's the day to stop doing it.
Well, for people like you and me, Sam, social media, that's our platform. That's how we sell our business. That's how we advertise. That's how people find out about our classes and come take a class. So we are posting videos of us shooting a stage.
Absolutely.
And things like that. So yeah, we are putting it out there. But yes, if I was not a firearms instructor, I would encourage anybody not to post about guns if you want
to. I've said that several times to my wife, that the second I don't need to market myself and everything, I get to delete social media, and I'm not doing that anymore. It's just that I have to share stuff. But again, you'll notice the firearms instructors like ourselves, we might be sharing our content, our classes, our dates, but I'm not talking about politics. I'm not coming out and talking about screw this person and screw that person. I'm not, it's just not happening. And but again, it should be an obvious thing, but holy crap, guys, if you're a gun guy and you're going to get in political arguments online, you're just opening yourself up to a whole mess.
Well, yeah, and I do not have any gun stickers on my vehicle. That's just begging to have somebody mm-hmm. break in. Even mm-hmm. this is Sam's t-shirt. Like, you can't tell this is a gun shirt.
They're not gun shirts, yeah.
That's why we do our t-shirts also. And yep. one of the things I wanted to kind of cover is I don't have a problem so much with the firearms because, we do the same thing. We market our classes. What I do have a problem is anything that perhaps involves firearms and what may be perceived as a callous disregard for human life. Copy. So when someone is shot, and that someone is someone that we would all say, oh, that was a criminal, it's not smart to say, well, good, he deserved that. He should have been mm-hmm. shot again. Or when someone's shot and they're not killed and they're a bad guy, criticize the other person for having poor marksmanship. That shows to the public, and it will be shown to a jury of your peers, that you're pretty reckless about human life and you're not very empathetic to, the lives of others. So be respectful. As a matter of fact, if anything, I think as firearm trainers, or actually people that are just, gun owners, anything that you do that has a positive image, I think that's something that's very much something that should, don't hesitate to get that out there. That so much of it is just being, oh, I want to be flippant. I want to get 1,000 likes for my cute little, smart LX thing and everything. And then later on having to explain what I meant by that, in a court of law.
Well, another thing is people who get their guns all painted up to look like, oh, this is a killer gun. Juries don't like that.
No.
Like, if I had to use a firearm, God forbid, to defend myself, I would hope it was like hot pink.
Yeah.
With little smiley faces on the shells, little rainbows. I don't know. Rainbows and unicorns. Mm-hmm.
So no Punisher skulls, no
exactly
no bay on the just side of it.
Plain black, nothing on it.
But it's and also another like, thing. I also agree with it's the attitude of carrying too. It's like, I don't understand that. Like, we all agree that the knowledge, skills, and attitude. We've heard that forever. I know it's the corny whatever NRA side of things, but I love that because you're not just sitting here and saying I'm the toughest guy in the room. You're also saying I'm probably the most composed. I'm probably the most safe person in the room if I'm a good firearms person, and that. That should be spoken of more often. It's not about your budget. It's not going to be about how many classes you took. If you're poorly representing us, I don't care. I don't care about what you're doing and what your rank is or what you teach or what classes you take. I don't care about your Gucci nods or what gun you have. If you're being a jerk, if you're putting a bad taste in people's mouths, I don't care.
You're hurting all of us.
Yeah. Yes. 100%.
Another thing that kind of ties into that is posting things that are unsafe. I understand people post that to try and help people learn, but instead you can spin that around and post, mm-hmm. this is how you do it correctly, rather mm-hmm. than yes. putting something out there that is incorrect. And then somebody else might watch that and say, oh, is that how you do it? Or not understand what's wrong with it.
It and is the same way you would coach. It's like, you're not going to say, don't do this. You say, do this. So exactly. I kind of try to keep that attitude and everything. If you post positive stuff, you don't post, this was terrible stuff. As much as itself, like defacing and it makes you human, like I try not to be negative on social media for that reason, because I don't want it to be misconstrued. I don't want somebody to take the wrong way. I don't want somebody to think it was negligent, not an accident. Like there's 100 reasons to start to understand. Yeah, you really have to, as professional in firearm industry, or really anybody with a firearm, just it's an unfortunate time we live in. Be careful.
I mean, I will post silly fun things like, well, for example, you shooting a plate rack, walking on a barrel, or me jumping in the air, doing the splits and doing a reload.
Sure. Like, it's nothing like
it's not anything negative, though.
Yeah, it's clearly in a controlled environment. You can tell there's no negligence going on. It's one of those things where, there's obviously, the world of, I mean, if you just watch Three Gun from an outside perspective, you'd be like, what in the hell are these guys? Like I get, yeah, you can't just have everything isn't going to be contextual when you see it online, but right. Yeah, try to keep it at least a positive note. I mean, Lani Oakley's a great example of that.
Oh yeah.
She's an Olympian. She's doing some of the coolest stuff ever. And it's with firearms. Do you think that's unsafe? Is there a negative air to any of those videos? Not at all. It's all positive, but yeah, it's cool. It's fun. You could draw some people in with that. You know, it's a good thing. It's kind of starting to understand that this attitude is it's unfortunate, but social media has a bigger influence that we'd like to admit, and you got to be careful.
Yeah, that's Lani Barnes. She goes by Annie Oakley or Lani Oakley on Instagram. Yeah. Check her out. She's really funny.
Awesome. I mean, doing some of the cool stuff. Yeah, she's a hell of a
shooter. I think she did a Texas Star by sitting on a Swiss ball or something like that, standing on a Swiss ball.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's crazy.
But it's also cool to see these kinds of people are the also the people who say safety this, they're teachers, they're out there. Like you'll start to notice those trends, and they're the safest person who carries the weapon. You know, they're the safest person out there with all their systems to keep themselves and the people around them safe. So it's this fun balance of, yeah, we could share all this, we could be nice, we could have a fun community, we could do all this, but you also have to be top foremost safety, business first, professionalism first. And not for nothing, but I've been kind of harping on a lot of our industry for that. This is not an easy industry. This is, I call them bowling ranges. I hate bowling ranges. I hate ranges that are trying to make it like a bowling alley, like come in, give me your $30, get out of here. Because you might not have gotten hurt this time, but this whole, you didn't get hurt this time, so nothing was wrong, is a problem in this industry. And it's like, we need to start having more responsibility in the sharing of things. It's, we have more access. It's way easier to get to everything now. So it's up to us gun people to not treat it like we're just going to go out and have a catch. You know, there's some responsibility with it. There's a mindset that comes with it.
One of my favorite things to do when I go into an indoor range I've never been at is to start counting all of the holes in the ceiling, you know, and it is just incredible. I don't think people really realize how dangerous those places are.
Yeah.
And sadly, there have been a number of suicides that have been committed at ranges, basically where the person would go in there and rent a gun and then shoot themselves out on the range. Yeah. My grandson actually worked at a shooting range in Arizona for about 6 months. And one of the things they taught was how to control someone that was either attempting to do that or just completely, reckless with a gun. And I'm sure all of you have been muzzled on the range, shotgun or a pistol at some time or the other.
So I worked at an indoor range before I went out on my own for my own company. And like, I even did it part-time for a while. And I joke with all my people, I got loaded guns pointed at me more than any police officer I know. And I was just standing there with my arms crossed, just standing there with my arms crossed. And somebody would just, hey, do you know why this isn't working? And so, yeah, the safety's on, thank God, give me this gun. I had that happen to me more than I'd like to admit. And indoor ranges are, they have this air of, oh, don't worry, we're in a controlled environment, so you're fine, nothing can go wrong. But that's not, as you just said, I walk in and I look and I go, all right, 2 yards, 1 yard, 3 yard, there you go. And they're all right there. It's quite a scary situation. But in New Jersey specifically, we had that suicide problem because we have a harder access to pistols in New Jersey. So people aren't willing to go through the permitting process to get a pistol. So they were renting pistols to hurt themselves. And we started then requiring you to come in with your firearms identification card to even rent stuff. And even then, it's one of those things where I don't feel comfortable being on a range around that many people in an environment I don't know them. And I hate to say that anymore, but indoor ranges could breed problems. We had several suicides just while I worked there. And thank God, the person who tried to hurt themselves got hurt, because obviously there's people behind you when things like that happen. So it's a sad situation, yes, but like these indoor ranges are this false sense of security for some people. And that's why I love some indoor ranges, because they only hire well-to-do RSOs, and they know they have endorsements from people like you guys. And then there's some of these indoor ranges that they're too big to fail, and they have 55 lanes, and they have two ROs that also do the intro lessons, and nobody's sued them yet. We'll just say that.
Something really sad about that whole situation is there's really nothing you can do to prevent it or catch it, because they're not going to be showing signs. If somebody makes that decision in their mind, they're in a place mentally where they're happy. Yeah. Like they finally made the decision they're going to do this. So you're going to be asked, well, were they showing any signs of sadness or anger? Well, no, they're happy because they made the decision that they're going to end it and they're happy with that decision. So you're not going to see weird behavior when they come in. You're just going to see a happy person, happy to go shoot guns, yeah, which is everybody pretty much.
Yeah. So I hate that because that happened at our range a couple of times and I don't like to tell stories about it, but the one thing I do in, because of what you just said, somebody came in and rented a pistol, 50 round of ammo, did his 15 minute intro, shot 50 rounds, grouped well, went well, everything goes well. No eyes are on him. Went and got his extra 50 rounds of ammo and round 51 he put in his head. So you have no idea. You have no idea. And it's also why I tell people at these indoor ranges, just be careful. Go to the last lane. Keep your eyes up. Don't just get buried. Hire somebody. This is why I like, hey, if you're going to go to one of these indoor ranges and you're not a gun person, go hire an instructor. Have somebody watch your back. Have somebody with you. There's a lot of these indoor ranges that they have instructors on staff for you to go with. Some of the RSOs are there for you. If they don't offer that, walk out. This is not an industry where you should be accepting those kinds of safety lapses. You should. I have a big red flag in my mind that when I see an RSO, when there's only two RSOs on a line, when one of them step into a booth to do an intro, it's a big red flag to me because they're not, that range isn't willing to hire instructors. They're actually willing to shirk your safety to make a little bit more money. And let's see what happens. Let's hope nothing happens in this 15 minutes while he's up there. I tell all my people that you start to see that red flag and go back to that range. And they're like, well, that a lot of ranges do that. I'm like, well, this is a problem. We need to start calling our own industry or it's going to be a bigger problem. Or lawmakers are going to start shutting us down instead of we shutting this down.
Right. So yeah. I do see this a lot in other countries where you have to jump through so many more hoops to get firearms. So it does make sense in a place like New Jersey, New York, you would see this more.
Yeah. It's
which kind of brings me into Steve. Yeah. I wanted to ask you to talk about which states are not covered by CCWSA.
New York, New Jersey, and Washington. Same thing's true for the Firearm Traders Association.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And so do you want to talk about why at all?
Well, is that a
tough question?
No, I don't think so. I couldn't tell you all of the reasons. I can just kind of tell you the main reason. And that is typically because of a pattern of behavior that we've seen on behalf of district attorneys and prosecutors to not take the side or at least not be objective when a citizen, a concealed carrier, an armed homeowner is forced to defend themselves. A very high possibility that that person is going to be not only arrested, but indicted, which means that that person in many instances is not going to be able to pay all of the money that is necessary for the initial legal battle. And it's even a possibility that it may not even be done there. In a lot of instances, it simply be that, okay, the state's, I'd say SOP was, we're gonna run this guy out of money. Yep. And then if we don't do it the first time, we do it the second time. And so as a result, the possibilities, we don't really feel like we're in a position where there is a good chance that we can keep our people from being indicted, or we're looking at a legal case that may be close to unwinnable.
Mm-hmm.
And so to that end, you know, I mean, we're in the business. I mean, we're very altruistic in many ways, but still our business model is, you know what, we want to make a profit. And it's kind of like, okay, if we go to a state where there's a high risk of this happening and a good risk that we may be forced to, we may lose that case, it's probably best for us not to be there. I hope that this is a situation that's going to change. I was talking to some people from Washington earlier this year that said that there was perhaps some positive movement in Washington State. Have not seen anything presented that was sufficiently strong right now to convince the principals of CCWA and the FTA to do anything otherwise. any information that we can get that might help with that particular cause, if we hear from prospective members, we absolutely will look into that. We want to expand our market. And as much as anything, you know what? This is a relatively small community. There's really not that many concealed carriers. There's not that many people that are concealed carriers that train. There's not that many people that are action pistol competitors. It's a small community, and we would like to serve that. And we think that it benefits everybody. That, you know, it's just kind of like, man, if I go to that place and I do what I would normally do in these other areas, there's a real high possibility that's going to be, the consequences are going to be negative. We best not be there.
Well, then I will say, I can't speak to Washington. I'm a Jersey kid, been here for 31 years, but I could say to all my people out there from New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania area, we are doing a good job at swinging the culture. I know there is a lot of competitive shooters and stuff coming out, but New York and New Jersey just swung over their cases. And we were discussing this earlier that hopefully we get enough interest, we get enough support out of Jersey, New York, we can kind of sway some of this and we can welcome you guys into these communist states because we need your support. We need you guys. We definitely need your help. And now I have at least a dozen students from New Jersey who just have an unrestricted CCW license, meaning they didn't, you know, justifiable need. I say unrestricted. There's still plenty of restrictions. You have to list your firearms and do all this kind of thing. But like, hey, I've lived here my whole life. Never did I ever think I'd see forward progress in firearms in New Jersey. And it just happened. So, hey, we're swinging the culture. Hopefully we get enough requests for you in New Jersey that we can actually start to have you.
I hope so. And that, and we see evidence that would support the idea that the prosecutors are not going to prosecute these people that do a legitimate job of protecting themselves and their families, regardless of the circumstances.
Yeah, it used to be a hard no in New Jersey. It used to be a hard, every single prosecutor, every single judge was just a big finger to the Second Amendment. But now we actually know there's a couple of judges who still hate us, but there's a large majority of them that are like, no, you're good. You guys are fine. As long as you're following the rules, go ahead now. So we definitely, we're seeing some progress in New Jersey. I know New York is the same exact way right now. So, I mean, the competitive community is who I'm in tune with, but I do a lot of training with like CQB guys, Filipino martial artists. And it's just like the Northeast in general has been booming. So, hey, I like to hear that we might get you in. We might get you in.
Well, I hope so. And I hope, you know, maybe within the next year and a half, you know, given the current political situation and basically the way that Washington, D.C. looks at, you know, lawful ownership of firearms, that they do not think it's a right. We're going to kind of probably need to see a shift in that direction. Oh, I'm so sorry. I do this on almost every podcast.
My dog usually barks too, and Sam's dogs.
Yeah. So my apologies. That we're hoping also, you know, 2024, we see some things that are not only positive for the firearm owners, but positive for the country as a whole.
Yeah, I'm noticing a good culture shift in that we're not just leaning on the NRA to do everything for us. And now there's several industries out there. There's several organizations. And just the average owner is more of an advocate more than anything anymore. Is I know social media is kind of could be a negative thing, but there's such a spreading of positivity with, hey, I carry now. I'm a normal guy. Training is everywhere. You can find groups all over the place now. So hopefully, I mean, we are seeing slightly a slight shift. So by 2024, I mean, I can see the firearms culture going the way of normal by then, where it's not so taboo. Right now, it's still a little bit taboo. There's still a taboo aspect to it. But I see it coming around where so many average moms are coming out to get their firearms training now. So many average people are just getting their kids into it now. Mm-hmm. I was a lucky kid in the 90s, and even then I was a crazy kid for getting into shooting. So I'm seeing more and more of it. And if I could keep driving it, I know Keita's driving it. If we could keep making it easy for people, it'll definitely benefit this whole country. That's a good point.
Well, Pixie, my daughter and I just went to Washington, D.C. in September with the D.C. Yep. Project. And we had a representative from every single state defending the Second Amendment. So I could put you in touch with those ladies from the states that you're not currently representing, because they are in direct contact with their senators, their congressmen. their prosecutors even, they would be able to give you a good feel on where people are at.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. I'll get that information directly in front of the three principals of both companies.
Yeah.
And they're the ones who are going to make that ultimate decision. But I mean, this is a business and they are looking at ways in order to expand. And this is obviously is a good way to go.
Yeah. Especially with the new law changes in New York and New Jersey. I mean, I understand how that could be a potential risk, especially right now with it just coming out.
Yeah.
But I also think this is a community that needs to be served.
Yeah.
We can help get that ball rolling.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we'll probably need to see, and I'm just kind of speaking, how are some of the future actual uses of self-defense handled by the court system? You know,
we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm hungry to see them, but we're going to need case out there for us to base any of these decisions on.
And a lot of that has to do with making good decisions on behalf of these concealed carriers.
Yeah.
For instance, you don't really want to be a Kyle Rittenhouse. Does that kind of help the cause? Yes and no. Basically, the best thing you can do is go ahead and be, as we talked about earlier, kind of that gray person, operate under the radar, be low profile.
You want to be an Eli Dickinson.
Don't be a hero. Don't be a hero. You know, think about everything that could happen if you're involved in a defensive use of force. And much of it's bad.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of everything that happened, your fate to a certain extent is going to be in the hands of other people for the foreseeable future.
You're not Batman. You're not going to go to your cave afterwards and sulk and get away. Yeah, you're going to have to face reality. So it's a big thing.
Face reality, and you don't know what that reality is going to be. And a lot of it is going to be how these people that you have no control over are going to respond and what conclusions.
Jury, the witnesses, all the stuff that you don't have control of that day. So what you do have control of is not saying, hey, what's your problem? You have a choice to not flip people off. I'm talking Jersey problems. You can tell.
I think people who, in general, people who conceal carry are the most well-behaved people. You're not going to start anything. You're gonna going to walk away. You're going to de-escalate. You're going to be the nicest person on the road because you don't want to get into any of that stuff.
As you should be.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is be involved in a shooting. And, the big thing is just don't do stupid things. Go to stupid places with stupid people at stupid times. You can avoid all that. You're almost never going to have a problem. And if you do, and you make some good decisions and perhaps some movements at such in which it's obvious you had no other choice than to defend yourself, you're probably going to be just fine. Anything short of that, it's just a roll of the dice.
Yep.
Good. Well, less than the cost of Netflix. protect yourself.
One of the other things, Tita, I might point out is that this is what I saw in the police community, and it's never been more true than it is now, is that your concept of what policy is can dictate what you do. So a lot of times, some of the things that I wanted to do, perhaps when we were doing a forced entry, I had to give some thought to real quick as to whether or not this was going to pass muster. It definitely may have been legal, but was it necessarily the right thing to do? And would I pay for that? Now, the good thing is, if you are so concerned about that and you find yourself in a situation in which your life may be risked, there may be cause to hesitate and give all that stuff consideration. And then all of a sudden you're way behind the eight ball and you can't catch up and you're injured or killed. So if you go out there and you get training and you study this stuff, you want to be as competent with the pistol that you carry for concealed carry as possible. You know, if you shoot, you know, a high-end CZ or a 2011 with a weighted magwell and, you know, a red dot and a compensator, and that's what you shoot all the time, but you carry a Glock 26, then I'm going to recommend that you spend some time with that Glock 26. Get as educated and informed as you can be.
Yeah.
and then get coverage, because then that puts you in a position that if I have to act, I know that I'm going to come out all right. If I make all the right decisions and right choices.
Yeah, I'm a trainer. I'm a firearms trainer. So it sounds like I'm selling hocus pocus when I'm saying, obviously training is the key. But I'll say this right now is I train competitive people. I train CCW people. And if you had to make a decision, well, you could bumper bowl your way through competitive training and never die in the street. Like, you'll never actually be hurt. But if you need to do some kind of training, it's very important to pressure test your carry situation. Can you use your carry gun? Can you produce? Can you be safe? Can you make good decisions more than anything, not just be violent? Can you make good decisions at the right time? So yeah, I think a big thing is if you're going to be a CCW person, understand that it's not a magic talisman. You need a lot more training in the CCW side than in the competitive side, in my opinion. And I sell competitive training. And I think one side of things is going to be for your life and you get one shot. So
it's a huge responsibility if you're going to carry.
One of the things about competitive shooting is it completely frees up your mind to deal with the problem. You don't have to fixate or focus on any aspect of your equipment, your holster, or your gun.
Yep.
You know, think of how many times that, you know, something happened and all of a sudden your gun was out. And you're like going, well, I never made a conscious thought to go to that gun. I've got it, you know, I've got it in low ready, finger straight.
Good grip, everything. You're like, wow, yeah.
So now my mind is freed up to see the problem, which that's one of the great things about competitive shooting is because you are problem solving to a certain extent. You've got a stage description. You have to fire the required number of rounds, and in some instances, no more than the required. You need to move at these positions. If you have your foot 3 inches out of position, you can get, you know, a penalty and everything.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. It makes, I love the way that Keita and Steve Anderson puts things like that, the subconscious skill sets. You're building these subconscious skill sets so I can consciously solve problems.
Exactly.
The way I use this is always going to be the same. This is always going to be the same. I'm always going to draw it the same. I'm always going to use it the same. So you might as well get some training so I can always use this tool. And then the separate training might be some mindset stuff. It might be some decision-making things. And that's kind of where that's where I've been at for the last 1.5, 2 years now. And it's the best training I've ever, it's the best I've ever seen myself perform. That's why I'm not trying to do anything other than provide my people good information. And I've noticed, hey, this helps me. Let me help you guys. Competitive training for the shooting side of things, but the mindset side of things, pressure test it. Get into some jujitsu, get into some Filipino martial arts, pressure test some of your decision-making under pressure, under stress. And you'll start to learn a lot from both sides. You learn a lot as a CCW from competitive shooting, but the competitive shooters will never admit that you will learn from going and get your ass beat by somebody on the mats. So it's a good
It's not fun.
No, it's not
dragged down and pressured by somebody. You can't breathe.
Yeah. Oh, I have such bad bruised ribs right now. And I was just joking with somebody. I was like, honestly, I think it's good for the soul to get your ass kicked. You got it. Mm-hmm. So it's good. I like to talk to somebody that sees both sides of it. You are a masterclass IDPA shooter, but I see you training everything else. And it's one of those things where the most well-rounded instructors, pretty obvious, are well-rounded trained. They train well-rounded. They've seen a little bit of everything. So.
Well, I don't think we're going to particularly be the best at anything that we do, but what we can be is good and competent and better than adequate at multi-levels. So I've got multiple skill sets. And most importantly, Sam, being a good competition shooter, having some good defensive firearms training or empty hand edged weapons, I've done Kitty Tertia, you will probably greatly decrease the chances you will need to use any of those skills.
Bingo.
If someone pushes you, you know good and well that you can handle that situation.
And
in a lot of instances, you see stuff developing much quicker.
Way before it ever happens.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So and I don't
want to go put a knife in somebody. I don't want to go put bullets in somebody. You start to see what's out there and what's available and learn to avoid it a lot better. I agree.
I think the funniest thing is after I teach a class and we go to class dinner, the way we all arrange themselves without speaking, everyone just sits in the right orientation. We don't say a word and every exit is being watched.
Like, all right, like nobody's lazy. Nobody's sitting there. Nobody gets sloppy drunk. Like nobody's just like on their phone the whole time. It's just, it's decent. People who train, generally somebody's coming out for a 2-day training class. They train. And those kind of people have that mindset of at least let me be a step ahead. let me just be a step ahead. And that's it. That
is everything. Nonverbal communication, I think, is just awesome, just between shooters in general.
And it's obvious when you see people who train and people who don't. Like, they might be able, somebody who doesn't train might be able to explain to you where they would sit themselves in a restaurant. But somebody who trains, you see them walk in, look, sit here, orient themselves. And that's just a good example for everyday stuff. I mean, if you think that doesn't influence how they go to their car, how they walk their wife to the door, you know, things like that. It's everything. You start making those absolutely everywhere. I've had people notice me do this as I walk up to my car about 40 yards away. I'm like, what are you doing? It's like, oh, can you see feet when you're close to the car? No, I check 40 feet away. It's like, yeah, so it's little things that you just start to build in awareness. And like, have I ever needed to use that? No, but am I ever worried that somebody's there? No, never worried. I have a little system for it. So it's that preparedness, it's that being aware, it's studying what's out there. Because that's the thing, is too many competitive shooters are not willing to study things that the defensive guys put out there. It's good information. Same thing with the defensive guys. You know, exactly. Just as well as I do, some tactical guys who they hear competitive shooting and they shut their brain off. And I'm like, come on, man, just humor me. Like, let me help you a little bit. You'll learn from everything. You really will. And it's hearing somebody who is as well-rounded as you and has been in the industry since, you said, 94 or previous. I think those two things go hand in hand. I think somebody who is hard focused and pigeonholes themselves has a short lifespan in this community. So it's a twofold thing. I mean, you'll not last in this community, but you'll also be better off just being open to all of the stuff. Look up some CCW stuff, some open-handed stuff, be a competitive shooter. It helps.
Well, it's just small things, you know, understand what a home invasion actually looks like. Yeah. In the event of a burglary, how's it going to take place? Yeah. What happens if someone comes into your house unannounced and they are an intruder or a burglar? Where are other family members in your house? Mm-hmm. How are you going to handle that? What do you need to do to intervene? Yep. You know, the best thing you can do is if someone comes into your house and it's just you by yourself, or you're sharing that bedroom with someone else, okay, stay right where you are. Say, who's there? If you don't get the answer you want, then just stay, and you're pretty much convinced there's someone in there. You know, announce very loudly, you need to leave now. I have a gun. I will shoot you. And I've called 911. Stay in a hard corner. That is a corner on the same side as the wall, as the door is. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to have a fight, have it there. But if you've got someone else in a different room and you have to get there, understand what your plan is. Have you considered just maybe having some ambient lighting on in some of your more frequent areas so that you don't have to use that weapon mounted light, so that every time you shine it in anybody's direction, you're pointing a loaded gun at them. You know, give these things some consideration, and it just changes everything. One thing I was going to mention, my wife has been doing this. Well, actually, she's been married to me long enough. We can go into a strange restaurant, and they'll move us to a table, and she will look around and she will pick the seat for her, knowing that I'm going to be in this other one. So I don't even have to spend a whole lot of time, you know. picking the decision, she just goes ahead and picks up on it.
Mm-hmm. I like her to think I'm not crazy. That's why I'm just like, see, I'm not the only one. I'm not insane. We do this. It's for a reason. It's for your good, I swear.
Steve, our time has come to an end, but I'd like to thank you so much for coming on and talking about all this stuff.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Knowledge.
If people have further questions, where can they go?
They can email me at stevemfta@gmail.com. And then my website is, it's Palisade Training Group, LLC. It's ptgtrainingllc.com. And I love talking to people on the phone. If you have a question and you want a detailed answer, I will do that. Much more inclined to do that than sit there and just exchange questions and texts and answers and everything. And I'd be happy to talk to any of you. I enjoy doing this stuff. It's a calling. It actually turned out my full-time job for 40 years. I was in the oil and gas business, and I just kind of did this on the side. And now it's become my calling. It gives me great pleasure. I like selling not only confidence, but competence. And at the end of a class,
I like that.
Nothing gives me more pleasure than seeing people walking around just feeling like they have been empowered. Something happened I have a say in what happens to me for the rest of my life.
I like it. I appreciate it. You dropped a lot of good knowledge on us today, and clearly you have some wisdom behind it. So thank you for giving us the time and all that experience, man. It was good talking to you. And again, all my people, check out FTA, check out the CCW stuff. I want you guys to actually educate yourself in that way. You know, I am a crazy person about training. Anybody listening to me, they know me. This is the side that's going to back you up on the back side of things. So if that day, that worst day of your life finds you, you don't want to be without. You don't want to be in the jail cell by yourself, even though you were the good guy doing the right thing.
Well, thanks for watching.
Yes.
Thanks for watching. Like and subscribe.
See you guys soon.